You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks. Welcome back to the Play Therapy Podcast. So last episode, we talked about how important play is for kids. And so this episode, I want to break into why play therapy. Because once we understand the power of play and what children get out of their play and the benefits, then we can talk about why play therapy. And in our first episode, I shared a little bit of my story, wanted to work with adults, then discovered play therapy, paradigm shift, my world's forever changed. And, you know, it's a really amazing thing when you discover something that you didn't know you needed in your life. But once you find it, you realize that you've always needed it. You just didn't know it. And we use the phrase at our center a lot, you don't know what you don't know. And that is true of kids. That's true of parents. That's true of therapists. That's true of us as humans, right? We're not aware of what we're not aware of until we're made aware of it. And then all of a sudden we can decide what to do with that knowledge and what to do with that information. And so that truly is my hope for this podcast and this Play Therapy Podcast audience, is that we continue to be made aware of things that we might not have known, and that it makes us better and it changes us for the better. And we take that knowledge and we're able to do something meaningful and beneficial with it. So when we're thinking about why play therapy, and again, my disclaimer is, if you've been a play therapist forever, if you've been in this field forever, please don't turn it off. I genuinely think that you will benefit from what we discuss together, but I have to keep in mind there are people that this is the first time they've ever been introduced to play therapy and what we do in our world. So I want to make sure that we are sensitive to that and that we all get everyone up to speed on the same page so that we can all move forward together. So when we're thinking through the play therapy approach, and in the next episode, we're going to dive into the child-centered model specifically. But play therapy as a whole, if we understand, actually, I'm going to pause and I'm going to give you a word picture because I think that's helpful. I'm a really visual person. So for me, I feel like we need, you know, a visual representation of this. So in my mind, this is a flow chart. So if you think about, you write something and then you draw a down arrow and then you write something and you draw a down arrow, that's kind of how I envision this podcast going. And it's also these early episodes, how it flows. So if we understand the power of play, why children do it, what they get out of it, how healing and helpful it is, that flows into why play therapy. Because you take what a child's naturally going to do anyway, and it becomes a therapeutic approach. So then once we establish why play therapy, then we move into the child-centered model, as I personally believe it is the most effective and the best approach to play therapy. We'll talk a lot about why in many, many future episodes. So this is a flow chart where one begets the next, begets the next. So play, we have to understand why, then play therapy, we have to understand why, then the child-centered model. So when we're diving into play therapy today, and again, some of what I'm sharing with you comes from the Cochrane's child-centered book and the Van Fleet child-centered book, I would actually encourage you to purchase both of those books. I'm not an affiliate. I get no commission or any kind of kickback on saying that. I was trained Landreth model. And so much of my entire first decade of play therapy and the work in the field came exclusively from Landreth's approach, with Bratton's CPRT manual tied in as well. And I always believe that the more perspectives you have on the same approach, the more well-rounded we are. And so I have truly loved reading Van Fleet's book. I've loved reading the Cochrane's book because it's saying the same things, but in a slightly different way, with a slightly different context. It just expands your knowledge of the field and our craft. So I would actually encourage you to buy both of those. Of course, I would encourage you to have Landreth's books. We'll talk about those when we get into the child-centered model. So some of what I'm sharing today comes out of these two books. So you have to keep in mind, in thinking in terms of the play therapy approach, that there is the therapeutic component being weaved in to what a child is naturally going to do anyway. So in last episode, we talked about all the benefits of play. So now when we think of it in terms of a therapeutic context, play is a natural drive, a natural motivation that kids have just because of the way that they are made. So children do it almost exclusively, and then as we get into adulthood, we do it less and less, which I think is so sad. I think we need to play more as humans, no matter how old we are. One of my play therapists actually at the center, she gave me a magnet for my birthday a couple years ago that said, do more of what makes you forget to look at your phone. And that's a whole other podcast because I've written a book against devices and how that has taken over our lives. And I just am very opposed to technology and screens and devices and all of that. So it was the perfect magnet for me. But I thought about that and I thought, what makes us forget to look at our phones as a society is fun, playful things. And, you know, it's going mountain biking, it's going hiking, it's going swimming, it's going to the beach, it's playing a backyard football game. It's playful activities that are distracting enough for us not to look at our phones. And I think that's powerful to recognize that play is what we naturally do to decompress, to relax, to have fun. And children do it frequently and pervasively, but we as adults don't do it as much. But it is that strong drive and motivation as the way that children are wired. So we have to keep in mind that developmentally, of course, there's all these things happening. And when child development theorists, that was hard to say, when child development theorists keep play in mind, they watch children play, when they observe children at play, when they see the benefit of play, it allows them to then create a therapeutic approach based on what they're going to naturally do anyway. So essentially what I'm trying to say is it is an age-appropriate, developmentally appropriate model for use with children. Because as Gary Landreth said many years ago, birds fly, fish swim, children play. And so when we think about this is just who children are and what they do, how do we take what they're naturally going to do anyway and what they're naturally going to get benefit from and put it in a therapeutic context? That's what the theorists were able to do, which is amazing. So when we're thinking about play in a therapeutic context, play allows children to express themselves. It allows them to express their needs, their feelings, their thoughts, their wishes, their desires, their struggles, their challenges, you name it. Play affords them the opportunity to make sense of it. And it is essentially the way that they communicate. So if you know Landreth's model, if you've read his books, if you've attended any of his trainings, whatever your background, and if it's with Landreth, you will have heard the phrase, children use play as their language and toys become their words. And so with that thought in mind, they are communicating through their play. And so they're able to, in a therapeutic context, do that with the therapist in the playroom. They use play, their natural medium. They use toys as their words, and they communicate to the therapist everything that the therapist needs to know. And that is such an incredible process to watch and to be a part of. It's sometimes I still have this moment of awe and wonder about watching it unfold in front of me in the playroom. And it's so powerful because I often have parents who want to give me an entire history, an entire background. They want to bring binders in for me. They want to bring medical records in. They want to have me talk to the school and talk to this person. And we do offer parent meetings before we begin with the child. We give them an hour of our time and we sit down and we call them consultations, et cetera. Okay, so I'm aware of how important it is for a parent to be able to share with us what they need to share with us. But the reality of the situation is, and I don't make this explicitly known to parents, sometimes I hint at it, but there's this really interesting phenomenon taking place as they're telling me all of this, where I'm sitting there internally saying, all I need to know is your child's name and I can do my job. And they feel compelled to share so much. And sometimes it absolutely is helpful and beneficial, because in the playroom, I'm able to connect dots and I'm able to see, oh, that must have influenced that and whatever. So I'm not saying that the context and the history and the background is not helpful. It is often. But at its core, play therapy only requires the child's name. I have everything I need to know to do an entire play session with a child just knowing their name, because they will communicate with me what they need to communicate. They will use play, they will express themselves, they will let me into their world, and they will show me what they're working on and what they need to achieve. So it's so incredible to think that all you need to do is give the child the playroom and the person, and they'll let you into their lives. What a humbling and incredible moment to have that connection forged through play. So as children are playing in a playroom, they are building bonds. There's a social component to play. We talked about that last episode. And of course, children seek play with other children, right? Go to a playground and strangers converge and they end up playing together within a few minutes. So children seek play with other children, but they also seek play with anyone that they can play with. So that's where the therapist-child interaction takes place. They'll do it with adults as well. How many times do your kids, or either in practice, your own children, children that you hang out with, how many times do they say, watch me, come do this with me, throw this with me, catch this with me? They want to engage socially via play. So they use social themes in that play. They learn behaviors through that play. And when adults play with children, there's attachment that's formed. So children seek engagement socially through all age ranges while they're playing. And that's why play therapy is effective, because they form attachment with the therapist, they form bonds with the therapist, and a relationship is forged. And I think it's really important to note that play is extremely freeing. And so in the playroom, as they're playing, they are able to feel deep emotion. They're able to relieve stress. They're able to reduce their inhibitions. They're able to show joy and excitement and curiosity. And there's big emotion that comes from play. And the therapeutic piece of that is learning to handle those big emotions, identify those emotions, communicate those emotions. We'll talk about all of those skills in future episodes. But it really does make a big difference for kids, the freeing effect that it has on them. And as children are playing, they are working on their struggles. They're working through their problems. They are solving problems. They are learning how to negotiate situations that are difficult. So as they are playing, it's one of the only times where they get practice for the real world. So if you think in terms of a playroom or when a child is at play, they are practicing and building skills to implement in the real world, in everyday situations. It makes sense that's used therapeutically, because they're able to try solutions and see if it works in their play. And if it doesn't work, there really are no negative outcomes for that. They just try something else. And it actually provides them with the safety to work through those inner struggles, those outer struggles, and then resolve whatever they're dealing with. So it is essentially a practice ground. That's what I tell parents all the time. Your child comes in here, they realize what they need to work on, they start to work on it, and they practice over and over and over and over again until they feel comfortable with it, until they feel they're able to master it, and until they feel capable of implementing it outside of the playroom. That's why more often than not, I see change in the playroom first before parents or teachers or whoever else is in the child's life sees the change, because they have to practice it and get accustomed to it in the playroom before it translates outside the playroom. So there's a lot of problems that are addressed in their play. And that's why therapeutically it's so powerful to have someone in there with them to help them on that journey. Couple more. When children are at play, they are able to have power and they're able to have control over things that they normally do not have control and power over. So in most situations, children are told where, when, how, why, what. There's very little power, very little control that children are given. But in the playroom, it's very different. In their play, it's very different. So when children are able to take charge and be in control and have power, and they're able to orchestrate something, and they're able to plan something, and they're able to execute something, it is essentially giving them power and control that they don't have anywhere else, which comes with its own set of learning and struggles and challenge. So as they have to modify their behavior in the real world, they learn to modify their behavior in their play. And so there's I don't want to say there's no risk, but there's less risk of hazardous outcomes in the playroom than there are in schools, in homes, with parents, with teachers, with all these other people in their lives. So as they are working through some of those things with power and control in mind, play therapy provides the place where they are able to navigate, what does it feel like to have all control? What does it feel like to have no control? What does it feel like to be all powerful? What does it feel like to have no power whatsoever? They swing back and forth. We talk about it as a pendulum a lot at the center. And so they go from one side of the pendulum to the other in the playroom. They want to know what it's like to have both, to see what it feels like to be in both situations, and then eventually learn to regulate within those two ends of the spectrum. So it's a really amazing thing that play therapy gives them that safe environment in which to do that. One of the very few places, actually, in a child's life they're able to do that. And then finally, there are so many types of play, and they occur in so many different contexts. It is really fascinating to think about. Children will naturally play. They'll naturally play with whoever they have available to play with. But play usually occurs when children feel physically and emotionally safe. And I don't want to dive really deeply into another theorist, because this is the Play Therapy podcast specifically about child-centered play therapy. But I think other theoretical models have helpful nuggets, and they are influential to a degree in our understanding of humanity. And so if you know anything about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, if you don't, just look that up. You'll see a little pyramid and you'll see a visual representation of his hierarchy of needs. But I'm bringing that up because there's a hierarchy of needs for all of us, and that is true of children at play. And so when we think about they need to feel physically and emotionally safe, just like Maslow's hierarchy, if you don't know where you're going to have food, water, or shelter, you're not going to worry about friendships. So in similar fashion, children will not play unless they feel physically and emotionally safe, or at least they will not play to the degree that they would otherwise. And so play therapy creates that physically and emotionally safe environment where children are able to play through the things that they need to play through. And that is such an incredible thing to be a part of. And it really is amazing to watch that unfold. So before we wrap up for today, I do want to share a couple of other thoughts, because it's helpful to think through why play used in a therapeutic context is so meaningful. So that's what we've already talked about, but I think it's important to look at some other anecdotal pieces so that we understand how play and therapy actually fuse together and maybe have some phrases that will help influence and kind of inform our awareness of that. So it's really important to keep in mind that systematic play interactions in a therapeutic relationship helps children with healthy development and problem resolution. So when we think about play therapy as a whole, there's all these definitions, there's all of these conceptualizations of what play therapy is, how it works, you know, how do we define it? How do we explain it? How do we conceptualize it? So, you know, it's a good thing to have those kinds of phrases settled down. But no matter what definition you look at, no matter what context it's written in, it all points back to systematic play interactions within a therapeutic relationship that help children have healthier development and problem resolution. So that's a really succinct way to kind of make sense of what play therapy is. And I want to dive in a little bit. This is kind of the anecdotal stuff I mentioned a minute ago. I want to dive a little bit into some of the misconceptions because I think it's really important to look at what play therapy is, but I also want to look at what play therapy isn't because there are a lot of misconceptions, there are a lot of misperceptions, and I think that if we as a play therapy podcast family are going to combat these and we're going to speak intelligently against these beliefs, we have to understand them. So first and foremost, many people in our field, meaning therapeutic field, counseling field, not specifically play, mental health professionals, social workers, all of those in the field, they sometimes and often actually have a misconception that if a therapist uses toys with clients, it can entice children to talk about what's bothering them. That is not play therapy. Just because a therapist has a few toys in their room where they most often use talk therapy with adults, just because they agree to work with a child, and just because they have a few toys in their room, that does not qualify as play therapy. Because the intention is not to entice children to talk about what is bothering them through toys. That actually flies in the face of the play therapy model. So we have to combat this belief that all therapists can work with children and that all children can be enticed to talk about what's bothering them with the use of toys. That is not reality. That is not the grounded play therapy model. And that is not helpful for children. We have to keep in mind, children are not cognitive. They're not rational. They're not verbal. So trying to use toys to get a child to talk is actually completely counterproductive and counterintuitive, developmentally and age appropriately. So there's misconception number one. Misconception number two is some therapists think that representational toys will help their client focus on specific issues. What I mean by that is if there's been allegations of abuse, sometimes therapists think that they have to have anatomically correct baby dolls in the room. If there are familial issues, there's divorce, relationship, separation, alienation, reunification, any kind of child family dynamic issue. Oh, we need to have a doll family in there so that they can use the doll family to focus on those family issues. This, again, flies in the face of the play therapy model because the premise is that in all of these scenarios, children are going to talk about what's bothering them. And the reality is, play therapy allows them never to utter a word. I've worked with clients, the therapists at my center have worked with clients that never spoke an entire word to us over the course of an entire treatment through play therapy. I went 20 weeks with a boy, and he was not selectively mute. We've worked with selectively mute children as well. That's not what I'm referencing in this case. I'm talking about children who were fully capable of speaking, but never said a word for 20 weeks of therapy because they didn't need to. And the outcome was the same. They moved through the themes and the phases that they needed to, and they met the goals that they needed to, and parents and teachers and all of us were so thrilled with the progress that was made. And they did not need to speak. There was never an expectation that they would talk because they used toys as their words. So that's misconception number two. And just kind of as a further explanation of that, I think it's important to keep in mind, a play therapist is never expecting, I don't use absolutes unless I mean them. It's funny, this is a related aside. You get a bonus story here. So two of my best friends from college, we all three were in the psych undergrad program, and our psychology department chair, Dr. Walton, he drilled into our heads all through our time in undergrad that people use absolutes all the time and they rarely mean them. And so I consistently use absolutes only when I actually mean it. And one of my best friends just texted me within this last month and said, I was going to say that I never call you. And then I remembered Dr. Walton saying that we can't use absolutes unless we mean them and unless they're true. And she went on to this whole rant about how we shouldn't use absolutes. And she's been like conditioned to not do that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, me too. So that was a related aside. But I genuinely am saying never as an absolute on purpose here. A play therapist is never expecting a child to be able to cognitively discuss or even understand the meaning or the content of their play. Never. A child-centered play therapist never expects a child to discuss cognitively, rationally, intellectually, the meaning and the content of their play. Because subconscious issues float to the surface of play, and we don't need them to talk about it. It naturally evolves in their play and they naturally work through it. So we have to keep in mind that children are regaining emotional and social health through their play, and it has nothing to do with what they say, what they think, what they talk about. Those are the misconceptions that are often posed as why play therapy doesn't work or people are confused by it. And I think I'll throw in one other that just popped into my head. Oh, all my kid's going to do is play. As if that's not enough. You know, well, you need to make sure that you talk to them about fill in the blank. Or they tell the child, you need to make sure that you talk to Miss Brenna about fill in the blank. And I'm constantly saying children will naturally address what they need to work on. And the play is hard work. That's the biggest piece of the puzzle. What the child is doing is very hard work. What the therapist is doing is very hard work. The work that's taking place in the playroom together is very significant. And so another misconception is like, oh, you're just going to sit and play. Well, they can play at home. It's the same thing. It's not the same thing for the reasons we've already talked about. They have to be physically safe. They have to be emotionally safe. They have to have a therapeutic guide. They have to be in an environment that's conducive to sorting out their problems, where there's no ramifications for messing up. There's no negative outcomes if something doesn't go well. That's a very unique set of criteria, and that happens in play therapy. It doesn't happen in other play environments. So we're getting into the child-centered next episode. So we'll finally start diving into some of those principles. But I think it's so important for us to be aware. We have to understand how powerful play is. We have to understand how powerful play therapy is. And then we get into the specifics of the child-centered model. So thank you for being a part of the Play Therapy Podcast. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.